Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey everyone, this is Angela and I'm here with John. We wanted to do this special episode today because we recognize that this is just an incredibly difficult time to be a children's lawyer.
Yeah, Jim and I are in the thick of it with you guys. We're trying to run our children's law office down here in Florida in the middle of this pandemic, and we're all locked in our houses being socially responsible, but at the same time trying to advocate for our clients when much of our usual systems and processes have shut down. And it's a frustrating time. It's, as someone said last night on television, it's a suboptimal time to be a human being. I thought it's an even less optimal time to be a children's attorney, because you want to advocate, but you also want to be socially responsible. Moving children from placement to placement, trying to get them home, trying to get them adopted. So much has been put on hold right now. And you're really probably mostly concerned about their present health and their mental health. And while you're trying to take care of you and yours and, you know, make sure you have enough toilet paper in the house. So it's a scary new time for everyone. And I think, you know, and that's about all we can acknowledge, is that no one's done this before, right? Except for the few people who were alive during 1918 when the flu hit. Other than that, no one has done this. So we're here today to give you this episode with some tips and pointers from the NACC, which has done a really good job of trying to gather intelligence from around the nation of what we're all doing to get through this together.
Well, and I think sometimes in moments like this, you can feel a little helpless or hopeless. And I hope once you get through this episode, you'll see that there are some very meaningful things that you can be doing as a children's lawyer, even with all of the restrictions that are in place. So we hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, everybody, this is Angela. And today, John and I are talking with Kristen Pisani-Jox of the NACC. She's the training director. And before we start, I just want to say that I think that the NACC is doing an amazing job right now. They're really bringing lawyers from all over the country together. And, you know, what we know about child welfare is that this virus is going to have effects for a very, very long time. And it's just a great time for us as a profession to come together for the benefit of our clients and hopefully learn some new things that we can take forward. So Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what we wanted to do is, because the NACC has been hosting these calls, some really good ideas are coming out. And so we're just going to touch on a few of those today. What we're hearing is that, you know, around the country, the courts are handling things in very, very different ways. And, you know, some cases, extreme cases, they're not hearing any. I've heard closed court. Most are doing something in between. But one of the ideas that came up was looking at these blanket orders.
Yeah, so we're seeing blanket orders in two ways. One, as you mentioned, with court closures and not hearings at all in dependency cases, and then we're not hearing certain types of hearings. And another really concerning blanket order that we're seeing is canceling in-person family visitation in an entire jurisdiction or state or county. And at NACC, we're really encouraging folks to push back against those blanket orders to make sure that courts and jurisdictions are making case-specific, family-specific determinations in these cases. And that's actually consistent with the guidance that's been issued by the feds in the Children's Bureau's most recent letter. Jerry Milner talks about really making sure that courts are making these individualized determinations.
Yeah, and I think, I know, John, your office is one of the lucky ones. Maybe you can talk about how your court's handling things.
I think they're striking a pretty good balance between social responsibility and responsibility to our jobs, right? As advocates and the courts as you know, having jurisdiction over these kids and these families. So we've canceled all non-essential hearings, but everything is remote. So we're moving quickly into a new world, and we're learning how to do court by Zoom or by WebEx, or sometimes just by conference line, which is what I did yesterday for 3 hours. And it's a new world, right? And everyone introduce yourself, and if 10 people speak at once, and the judge has to then go, okay, wait, let me call the roll call. It's just little things like that. It's a new world. I think it's weird for us as advocates, right? Right now we're all restricting our lives. That's a socially responsible thing to do, is restrict our lives, but it goes against our nature to restrict our advocacy. So we're in a position where we have to find that balance.
Right. I think that's absolutely right. And I think what's happening is that the how is different. We're becoming much more virtual. We're, like you said, learning as advocates how to adapt to our current circumstances to become maybe more tech savvy than we have been, to help our clients and families learn how to use technology. But what hasn't changed, as you mentioned, is the important needs of children in the dependency courts, and the fact that that advocacy can't stop. It just has to be delivered in a different manner now.
When I think looking at different ways to do things, obviously visitation is such a critical part of representation and staying in touch. And there were a number of ideas that came out of the last NACC call, but the one that I thought was so creative from Chris Henderson in Colorado was, I think one of their attorneys went to the house of one of his clients and talked on the phone, and they looked at each other through the window.
Yeah, I mean, we know that face-to-face contact is so important for social interactions in general, and especially during a pandemic where children, even more so than adults, are going to be understandably anxious and fearful and confused about what's going on. Just a phone call may not be enough of a reassurance. They may need to see their attorney's face, who may be one of the most consistent professionals on their cases. So I did think that was a very creative suggestion. And again, learning to use the different technology platforms, especially for older youth. Many older youth are very familiar with using technology. They use technology in their daily lives. So this is a really important place to engage youth in the conversation, to find out what works for them, to find out what technology platforms they're comfortable with communicating on, and seeing if those can be appropriate and confidential means of communicating with clients.
Well, I think too, another consideration, if virtual is what is needed in the case, looking at increasing the amount of times that they would, if they can't see their parent in person, but if they could talk to them, if they have the technology and they could talk to them more times than they would have visited in person, that could be helpful as well.
Absolutely. I mean, right now, yes, we are really concerned about COVID-19 is a very scary and unknown thing. That carries a lot of health risks, but there also is a tremendous emotional and mental health risk to being disconnected right now and being isolated for these families. So any way we can encourage frequent daily interaction is important. And frankly, probably something that should have been happening before this pandemic, and I'm hopeful that will continue after, when systems see how easy it is to put families in touch with each other on a frequent basis. And there are some great resources out there for thinking about ways to make that virtual contact more meaningful, especially for younger children, whether it's helping families read to children over Zoom or play a game together or draw drawings together instead of just talking. We know for younger children, getting them to just sit and stare at a screen may be difficult. So I think using the resources out there and getting creative and really working with families and engaging family voice on what do you want to do during your visit? What would be the most meaningful thing for you and your parents or you and your children?
Well, and all of that assumes, of course, that the kids and the parents have internet access and a device, which we know isn't necessarily always true. I know one of the ideas was looking at whether the school system might be providing technology. I know some schools do that, and that's one avenue, but and also that some of the internet providers are offering free internet in some instances. But are there other other ways to address this, the lack of access to internet or tech?
Yeah, certainly this is a big challenge right now, because this is, tech is the only way children can not only access contact with their family, but their education right now, and also just social interactions that are developmentally appropriate. This might be a place where it may be necessary to go to the agency and see what the agency can provide right now to support families. This may be something that is a reasonable effort right now in order to move these cases forward and maintain these really important connections for children. And if all else fails, the court is always available as an avenue. Again, it may be a more challenging and virtual avenue right now, but if this is something that children and families need to maintain these really important connections, then as advocates, we do have a responsibility to use every advocacy tool in our toolbox to get that for our clients.
And the interesting thing now with the education, I find in my area, is that a lot of the kids now have to convert to virtual learning for the first time. And the parent actually plays a big role in the setup of that, and of for some kids, of navigating, you know, you have a Google Classroom. Here, let me help you find it. We've had kids it occurred to us a couple of days in that we have kids in group care that didn't know how to set it up. They have IEPs too, so they have learning disabilities that we have to see how that's going to be accommodated for virtually. So there's all kinds of things, and we realize group home staff, no one is getting the computers, no one is setting the kids up on the computers once they have the computers and showing them where to go. So that's something that we kind of had to step in and make sure was getting done by the agency or even by our own staff.
Yeah. I think high quality representation is always a key piece of the child welfare system. But during COVID-19, that's becoming ever more evident as attorneys are stepping in and playing some of these roles and advocating to get children just their basic needs, their education, their needs for daily living, their needs for consistent and appropriate care. Advocates, attorneys are playing just such an important role right now for children. And it is so important for us to continue to support those efforts.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. The flip side of that, and I was just curious, John, in your experience, are most of the parents connected? Can they, I know you said some are conference call and some are Zoom, but are most parents able to participate in these video hearings and things?
We are finding that our parents are actually adapting well to this. And maybe it's just the saturation of cell phone technology. You know, our parents are largely millennials, right? And they can download an app quickly. It's intuitive for them. They're not struggling with getting, certainly not on the conference calls and even on the Zoom and stuff like that. So far, we're not seeing that. We're actually seeing them adapt pretty well to it. We're going to run into the problem of not seeing their children physically very soon, right? We're only in week four now, but we're going to soon run into situations where it's just not okay to not see your child, because a lot of my younger clients, they're only going to spend so long on the phone with their mom or dad. And so that's frustrating, because the mom or dad want to do their visitation. They want to do what they're supposed to do under their case plan, and they want to talk to their kids. But my clients, very often, they just don't engage over the telephone. And even in front of a computer screen, it's not the same as being with your child. So we're going to run into that. I'm not sure how we're going to deal with it as a system. Just like anything, it's going to be something we grow into as this becomes our normal for a while here going forward.
Even though courts are restricting the types of hearings sometimes to emergency hearings, I don't think that necessarily needs to prevent lawyers from filing motions on behalf of their clients.
I absolutely agree. And motions practice is really key right now, not just for the immediate, but for the long term. The impacts of COVID-19 on all of us, but especially on the child welfare system, are going to be felt long after we stop social distancing and go back to quote unquote normal. And this time doesn't go away for children and families. There's not a pause button you can press here. And as attorneys, we are the only ones who really can preserve the record as to what happened during this time. And as courts are closed or as virtual hearings are more limited, written advocacy plays a key role in this in order to preserve what was happening with visitation during this time, services, reasonable efforts. When we come out of this, there are still going to be children who need to be reunified with their parents, children who are looking at adoption, children who are aging out of care. And we need a record of what happened during this time. So even if, and I know some courts even are don't have electronic filing set up yet, there's still a role that advocates can play in terms of writing it and filing it when it can be filed. But I think just, again, using every method available to make sure that this time is not a blank for families, that there's a clear record of what happened and perhaps what should have happened.
Well, and this is another example of something that if people aren't engaging in regular motion practice and they get in the habit of doing it now, that would be a great thing to carry forward when things are back to whatever our new normal is. One of the areas I think that is really an area that we could focus on at this time, we need to focus on, is the safety of kids in congregate care. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about some of the strategies that people are using to address the safety, the obvious safety issue with staff coming in and out every day multiple times and the heightened risk to those kids.
Absolutely. So congregate care is always risky for youth and is never a good option. Youth should be with families. But especially now with the highly contagious nature of COVID-19, it is very difficult to protect and ensure the health and safety of youth in congregate care facilities, as well as maintain appropriate staffing if staff contract the illness and can't come to work as well. And we are hearing about youth in congregate care being placed in isolation if they've been exposed or have contracted the illness. So I think this is one of those places for advocates to go back through the whole history of the case and figure out, is there a way to get youth out of congregate care and with family, including exploring family members who were ruled out for one reason or another that may not be currently the case, seeing if there are non-kin foster homes available, seeing if reunification is appropriate, perhaps there are safety concerns that have been abated or can be abated or are simply less severe than children staying in congregate care and being exposed to the virus or being placed in isolation. So I think this is a place many law offices, the Juvenile Law Center, the Youth Law Center have developed really excellent tip sheets and guidance for advocates to think about in trying to get their clients out of congregate care facilities.
And those are all on your website, right? NACC's website in this resource hub?
Yes, we do have a COVID-19 resource hub that we keep up to date as we can. And it does contain a number of tip sheets from around the country that advocates can use.
Yeah, I think, one of the other pieces of the congregate care, obviously these are things that we would want to be doing anyway, but now that you have this increased risk, I think the idea of really going back and making sure that this makes sense. The other part, though, is recognizing that the types of services, they're not going to be in-home services or anything like that. So whether it's some kind of telehealth or some other support for, we might need to find some way to support that family if, the child needs services in a particular home.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, this time doesn't just go away. So youth and families have the needs that they had before COVID-19, and those might be amplified by the anxieties and fears and isolation that's being caused by the pandemic. So absolutely, telehealth and telemedicine are really important things to explore and to see what's out there and to push for coverage for that if it's not covered by the child's insurance provider, to explore with the agency and the courts whether there can be temporary coverage of that until this abates, because again, we don't want to set up families by not giving them the services that they need. But of course, that's another challenge that is that advocates are facing right now. But attorneys can play a really important role in ensuring access to the services that are available and creating stop gaps in this time.
Yeah, I'm seeing some things get kicked down the road, actually, just that because like an IME, in an independent medical exam, the doctors just won't do it here remotely. So it just gets set off. And that's the key to moving the case forward. So those types of services for parents and children are sometimes just being like, well, let's set this off till May. And everyone is hoping against hope that we'll all be back in May, but we don't know that. So the lasting effect, I think that's why, because the remote provider thing, even when providers aren't remote, sometimes the consistency and quality of providers is such that, you know, they're not that connect. Our clients, our child clients, are not that connected to their providers, unfortunately. And I think that's why it goes back to our first point. So important for us to make face-to-face contact and for us to do the drive-bys of the group home maybe and say, hey, I'm outside, I'm on the phone with you, look outside, that's me, bye. You know, don't stop, don't get out of the car, don't let them come to your car, but maybe just do a drive-by, because I'm worried about the kids in congregate care. What I'm seeing here is kids, I mean, these group homes only operate so well when the kids are in school all day, right? And now they're home and they're just sitting with shift staff. And it's a really bad situation for us here, because, you know, idle hands are the devil's playthings is the cliche. And our clients have nothing to do and no stimulation. And they already have impulse control issues and things like that. So they're getting into all kinds of trouble, picking up charges, running away. As this goes on, I don't know how it's going to play out, but it's right now, it's not a good recipe for kids in congregate care where we are.
Absolutely. And certainly there's no substitute for high quality therapy, but what may be important right now is just consistency and contact, like you mentioned. So if the attorney can play that role just by checking in once a week on Zoom or Skype or FaceTime or sending texts or checking in with the family, again, it's not a substitute for services, but it's something, and it's really important, because I know how long this has felt for me as an adult, but for children, we know developmentally have totally different concepts of time, and this is likely feeling much, much longer for them, and to not have that level of personal contact makes it even worse.
Right. It's one thing for us to be trapped in our own homes with all our own stuff and all our own people, but to be in a group home with really very little stuff of your own, you know, none of your people, it must be extremely challenging for these kids who already come with their own issues. So I do think we have to be super creative, and as probably one of the most consistent, if not the most consistent person in the child's life, we can play a big role in keeping things maybe under control.
Agreed.
I think another group of cases that we could look at and move forward now, and again, we're trying to find, you know, action steps that you can take now to keep these moving forward, is kids who may have been very close to reunification. And I think it's Don Duquette that says you should always ask the question, why can't this child go home today? I think this is really one of the times when, if there were just a few things left on the list or a few visits left, this would be a great time to revisit that.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, often case planning, you know, these decisions are made, you know, on a trajectory and are very deliberate and planned out. But it might just be that you didn't reach the fourth overnight visit that you wanted to have, but the circumstances are still safe and can enable the child to come home. And I think, again, this is a place where one of the biggest problems with the blanket orders that we referenced earlier is it is not including youth and families in the conversation. And this is a really key place to ask youth and families, what do they think they need? Is the youth ready to go home? Is the family ready to be reunified? What concerns do they have about doing that during COVID-19? And is there anything that can be put in place to assist? where, right, the child welfare system, when it doesn't work well, makes decisions for families without consulting families. And during COVID-19, I think that has been amplified. And so I think this is one of those places where youth and family voice really is critical.
Well, and there may be parents who are more willing to bring it more relatives to the table. I mean, they just, there's all sorts of possibilities that this situation brings, which is just all the more reason to look at every case one at a time and really see, why are we where we are? Was there anything we didn't explore before? Or, you know, has enough changed that we could get these kids home?
Absolutely. I mean, some families we know during the pandemic have been sheltering in place with some extended family members. So maybe that's actually a positive for a youth who's about to be reunified, that there actually are more family in the home that can serve as protective factors or help care for the children in different ways. So again, not looking at how things were before this happened, but looking at where we are now, what's the current circumstance of the youth and family, and is it safe for the child to go home now?
We've seen that. We've seen both the child in group care whose adult sister takes him in, you know, never said that she could be his custodian, but because of this, they want to be together because they're family. So he's been there throughout the pandemic and out of the bad, less than optimal group situation, and it's going well. And so you see that kind of flexibility, but you also see, on the flip side, you see flexibility that is like sometimes it maybe throwing out the process and disregarding safety. And, well, we don't have any placements, so let's send these kids home now. And it's like, wait, you just removed them for domestic violence between the parents 2.5 weeks ago, and now you want to send them home. And what's driving your decision is because the pandemic has come and there are no more placements, you have no place to put these children? Or is it, you know, in other words, we're looking for creativity, but we're also guarding against the agency just throwing out their processes and putting kids at risk? Because one thing we've seen is such a lack of placements. We've had a couple kids who have been stuck at the detention center for days because DCF was supposed to pick them up, and they were literally saying to us, we don't have a bed. No one out of county will take any of our kids. We don't have a bed in county. So it's like, it requires creativity and patience, and I guess really interjecting yourself into the agency's workings to form new solutions.
Right. Because those blanket policies can go both ways. So a blanket policy that we're just going to send everyone home who was supposed to be reunified in May also would require a second look and some advocacy to see maybe that's appropriate for your client, but maybe it isn't. And I think your point about placements raises the issue that an important role attorneys can play now is contingency and plan B planning. There are going to be lots of placement disruptions. There always are in the child welfare system, but especially now, people are going to get sick. People have family circumstances where they're nervous. And so I think not starting the planning when it happens, but starting the planning now for if my client were to disrupt their placement, what options are out there? What options does the agency have? What family options are there? Again, doing that case mining and seeing, is there a stone we didn't turn over or that we should turn over again to see if a family circumstance has changed? Or like you mentioned, John, maybe there's someone who can take the child temporarily while this is going on or something like that. But now is the time to be creative and to do a lot of plan B planning. And that's a place that attorneys can play a really key role.
Well, Kristen, I think this has been incredibly helpful. I hope we can do this again. Is there anything that you would like to add before we wrap up?
Just that I think this is a place where attorneys can and should lean on each other. We're all learning during this time, and there have been some really, really great resources put out there. And as we mentioned, NACC is trying to collect those resources on its page and its resource hub. So I would encourage attorneys to look there. But I think we can learn a lot from each other during this time and see what creative advocacy other jurisdictions are trying and having success at, or failing and trying again. This is really a time for community in the child welfare field. And I've already learned a lot from other practitioners that we've been speaking to.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Kristen, we thank you so much for joining us, and we thank everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.